In Exodus 34:6, Moses, just before he received the Ten Commandments the second time, it says, "The Lord passed before Moses and proclaimed, 'The Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness.'" And then in Lamentations 3:22 and 23, "The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness." Last week we talked about how God is present with us all the time, the divine presence in our midst. And that really leads me to remember that God is faithful. That God is always with me and will never leave me or forsake me. And that God is faithful to lead us and guide us always. I think where we get confused is when our expectations don't match our experience. But God wasn't there when, and we can fill in the blank with whatever our expectation was then, that we were assuming would go a different way, and we are bothered or upset when it doesn't go as we anticipated that it would go. So then we say, but God wasn't there when I needed God. Or if God is real, why are so many people starving? Or why are so many people dying of cholera or whatever the current disease is? We have lots of why questions. I think that part of this is that this is one place that we as Christians are not careful with our language. I don't know how many times I hear people in the middle of a hard thing, right smack dab in the middle of the hard thing, say, "God is in control." Or even, "It is the sovereign will of God." Both of which I struggle with. Because I think that really sets up a scenario in which we do struggle. If God is in control, then why did God allow this to happen? God was in control. That shouldn't have happened. God had the ability to change it. So God must not love me. I hear that one too. God must not love me, because if God was God, then this wouldn't have happened. I don't want a God whose sovereign will demands the life of my child or my spouse or someone that I love. I don't blame them. Or there's this song by Matt Redman which says, "You give and take away, you give and take away. My heart will choose to say, Lord, blessed be your name." And that phrase is sung multiple times as a bridge. I really get that in the song, in the whole song, he's talking about how we bless the Lord in the good times and in the bad times. That it's a decision to, that times will sometimes be hard, and that there will also be good times, and that we're committed to walking with God in the good and in the hard times. But this particular phrase, "you give and take away," is sung multiple times as a bridge in the song. And it bothers me to the point that I can't sing it. Because it gives the emphasis on that God gives and takes things away, that God creates the pain, the difficulty, that it's God's fault, that it's God who causes the hard things in our lives. So I looked it up. The verses there, that phrase is taken from Job 1:21, and it says, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Now that is at the very beginning of Job's struggle. He has just faced this difficult trauma in his life when everything has taken, his life was spared, but everything is taken away from him. And he is facing that struggle and saying, "It's you gave and you take away, and here I am." But I'm, at that point, he's saying, "I'm going to bless the name of the Lord." It's his response as the bad things begin happening. But we also struggle with this book. It's a book that we often don't like. The first paper I wrote when I was in seminary was on the book of Job, and I struggled with it, but I remember in the end really finally wrapping my head around the book and what was going on, and it began to make sense to me for the first time. It's the oldest book that was written in the Bible. It's the oldest recorded book we have. When they look back at when was the first book written, they look at Job, not Genesis. And it is written with the purpose of countering the common belief of the day that bad things that happen to us are a result of sin. That was the common belief in those days, that if something bad happened, then somebody sinned. You sinned? What did you do wrong? Or your parents sinned, or somebody has sinned and therefore you suffer this bad thing, and the fix is to repent of the sin, of course. But the truth is that bad things happen. That's a reality. Now, one of the first thing I learned from the book of Job is that it's okay to ask why. Job did. Over and over again, he asked why. And people gave him all kinds of answers, which weren't really good answers. The platitudes and all those things didn't really work. But that it's okay to ask why, even when there's no answer. And that we need to face into the difficulties in our lives all the way. That we need to persist in asking until we get that stuff out, the kinds of questions that are burning within. We need to be able to say those and to get them out. And that we need to avoid the plastic answers that don't really answer anything. They're there, or it's the sovereign will, or God's in control. I mean, they don't answer the cry of our heart. And that's the truth. But it is okay to cry out to God with the truth of our pain. And in the end, we find that God is present even in the difficult places. And I think that's the miracle about Job. In the end, Job saw God. He came face to face with the living God and recognized that God was present all along. That God was present with him from before the tragedy all the way to the end. And in the end, he saw the fullness of God, a God that was greater than he had originally thought. Because it wasn't a God that was just always there when things are going nice, but it was the kind of God that is there through everything and revealed himself to him in a profound way. So I think the book of Job is an invitation to find God within our struggles and to see God fully. See God as enough for every situation in which we find ourselves. But to simply say that we end with the place that the Lord gives and takes away is to kind of leave it with this unfinished story of what God is doing in our life. The truth is that bad things happen to good people. They just do. Also, God has given us free will. And we all have the choice to act good or to act bad, to do good in the world or to promote evil in the world. And stuff happens, and we live with the consequences of those decisions all the time. We live with the consequences of someone who drives too fast and cuts us off and catches us in an accident. We also live with the consequences of someone who pays attention and slows down and makes space for the person that's speeding, and we don't get caught in the consequences of that. God never promises that in following God our lives will be good and turn out nice. God never promised us a rose garden. But God does promise that God will be with us always and accompany us everywhere. That we will never, ever, ever be alone, no matter what we do. No matter anything, God will not abandon us. God loves us. Ultimately, I've come to see that God's presence is more important to me than anything else. And in that, I see the faithfulness of God. The solid and absolute faithfulness of God. That God is absolutely faithful. In 2002, I hit a particularly low time in my life. As I came to Seattle, I had a vision of a great people to be gathered, and as many gathering places as there were Starbucks, and a variety of gathering places that were as varied as Starbucks are. But it seemed like we were diminishing instead. We were getting smaller, and we felt really puny. I was given a week away, and I spent time listening to God. And as I listened, I was led to the story of Abraham and Sarah, and the promise that Abraham would be the father of many nations and that he would have many descendants. Yet for 25 years, he had no children. Now, I have heard that story my whole life. I heard it when I was in preschool, I think. I don't know. I grew up on it. But I never sat with what it would feel like to get a promise that you're going to be the father of many nations and have many descendants, and yet for 25 years not have a child until you are old and not able to bear children anymore. Now, God, what are you doing? You got it kind of screwed up here, because I'm sorry to tell you, but the facts are it isn't working anymore. And what would that have felt like? What were Abraham and Sarah supposed to do? What did God want from them? And as we read through the story, it's really clear that it isn't the human fixes. They tried those, and those were not the answer. It became clear that all God asked was for them to be faithful. All God asked was for them to be faithful, to do what comes naturally, to live faithfully, and to walk with God daily. We humans are great at human fixes, and we're great at pushing for results. But then we're disappointed with the lack of answers or the lack of results, particularly results that we expected. And we're disappointed when those answers just don't match our expectations. But the truth is that all God asks for us is that we are faithful. That we are enough to recognize that with God we have everything we need. We have everything we need to be faithful and obedient to what God is asking of us today. We sometimes want enough to live out the next 10 years. I want everything I'm going to need for the next 10 years. God, can I have it all right now? Everything I'm going to need, I want it all right now, and I want with it a guarantee that I'm going to be okay for 10 years and nothing bad's going to happen. That's what we want. That isn't what God gives us. God gives us everything we need to be faithful in this moment. Everything we need to live fully with God in this moment. Everything we need to be a God person and to face any challenge that comes to us in this moment. And in the next moment, we have everything we need. And in the next moment, we have everything we need. And in the next moment, we have everything we need to be faithful, to face whatever is in front of us in that moment. That's huge. In 2015, we sit here aware that our numbers have decreased even further and that finances are down. What are we to do? Read up on church growth principles? Maybe we should go study some growing churches and find out what they're doing so that we can replicate it here. Or import a fix. Get a consultant. Pay big money to some consultant to come in. Now, I'm not saying that God never leads a person to do some of those things, but to feel the pressure of putting in a human fix when we see something that seems incongruent with our expectations is not the answer. The other thing that we do is we say, are we dying? Has God given up on us? What if we don't make it? And whose fault is that? In the 90s, when I came to Seattle, I also had a vision that God was going to go do great things in Seattle. And when that vision didn't come to fruition, when things didn't work out as I anticipated, I assumed that it was my failure, that I had not done enough, that I wasn't good enough. Somebody said to me, "You can't do everything you think you could have done. I can't live up to the, if I just mustered up all my stuff, I could always be good enough. I could, you know," and so, and we're human. And I realized there was truth in that. I also realized that God called, but that it isn't, God's call isn't always answered. And I think God is always calling people. And for me, I see God as constantly calling Seattle to walk with Him in new ways. Constantly calling the people of Seattle to join God's heart, to live out the truth, to recognize the miracle of God in our midst. But it's not always answered, and that's the reality. It doesn't mean God isn't calling. Doesn't mean God isn't at work. But the reality is that people don't always listen and don't always hear. My task is simply to be faithful and to be obedient. To ask God, what next? What do you want me to do in this moment? What am I to do? How am I to move forward? I'm to be faithful. But we have this assumption often that if something doesn't go the way we expect it to go or doesn't work, we don't fit the success model, that it is simply our failure that we didn't hear, rather than to go back and say, God, now what? In my case, God led me to Spokane for 6 years and then brought me back to Seattle. And I'm convinced that it wasn't a mistake that I came back to Seattle. That wasn't just a fluke of God's, oh, okay, this is a whole different thing, but now you can come. I'm convinced that God is doing something much greater and much bigger in me and in the lives of all of us. God led me back to Seattle, and I realized that I had that same dream. But what expectations are we holding on to that don't serve us well going forward? What expectations limit us at this point in our life? Can it even be that we're preparing the future for the next generation? We have to listen and to ask, what am I to do? Every one of us. As a community, we ask that. In community, as individuals, we ask that. What are we to do? Is there someone who yearns for the Quaker way that we rub shoulders with in some way, and it is our task to invite them to come and to participate with this other group of folks that know the Quaker way? What are we to do? How are we to be faithful? What does faithfulness look like in 2015 for North Seattle Friends Church? In 2002, I had an assumption that God would grow us first and then do big things. I proved to be wrong. God did big things with us without growing us first. God takes what we offer and uses that to do God's purposes in the world, and it is enough. I am enough. You are enough. We are enough to do everything that God is asking us to do today. What do we have to offer? A faithful and obedient people. I don't think I've ever met a more faithful and more obedient group of folks than those of us gathered at North Seattle Friends. As was said earlier, the Spirit is here and it's recognizable. We sense it, we know it, we live it. We hear it within, we hear it from each other, we're aware of it. God is present. We have a building and a land. We have space that we inhabit. We have a Quaker understanding of God and how God works among us. We know the real Jesus. We know what it means to walk in faithfulness. We have borne witness to the stories that each of us carry about how God is with us day after day after day. We live those out everywhere we go. What is God doing in our midst? One of the things that we're aware of is this gift out of the blue that someone wants to buy our property. We didn't go looking for it. We didn't ask anyone if they wanted to buy this building. People knocked on our door and said, "We would like that property, and now we're looking for where that could be that we'll go, and we've identified a piece of property and are considering that property and whether or not that's ours going forward. An architect is coming to meet with us the end of this month and to answer our questions about what that looks like for North Seattle Friends and whether relocating to this new piece of property is way forward for us." God is doing that. That is so not of our doing. It's amazing. It is beyond our comprehension. So it has to be God. That isn't one we could have dreamt up. We are living out the truth of God in our daily lives. And we hear that Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, as we bear witness to the miracle of God at work within us. And God is leading us into wholeness and fullness, both within each one of us, and as a body. One of the miracles about the potential purchase of this property is the commitment of the buyer to make us whole. Absolutely unheard of. Absolutely unheard of. That a buyer would say, "I want you to be whole in a new look. We want this space, but we want you to be whole, and therefore we're willing to work toward that end of making you whole." That is God. That is God's miracle of wanting us to be whole. And we continue to grow in our understanding of God and how to live faithfully. The truth is that that's a journey we're always on. And it takes new unfoldings and new twists and turns, and we delight in growing in an understanding of how that plays out in our lives as we continue this faithful walk with God day by day, step by step, with a God who is absolutely faithful with us. The faithfulness of God. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. God's mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. Let's wait in the presence of a faithful God.